Hello, hello, and welcome back to Reality TV. What a week and what a show I have for you today. Settle in because I have a feeling it's gonna be a long one. I jumped into Married at First Sight for a 3-hour episode. I mean, my God, did they drag that out or what? But it was pretty damn good. I'm interested in the couple, so I'll be talking about that. Probably towards the end of the show, I'll build up my stamina for it. I also had the latest on 90 Day Fiancé, and I'm still hanging in there a little bit for Love After Lockup / Life After Lockup. But before I jump into that, we got to discuss what's going on with Armie Hammer. For the life of me, could I tell you what movie he's from or what TV show he's on? Absolutely not. I only have time for, you know, our reality shows and housewives in my life. Anyhow, Armie Hammer has found himself in a pretty dark place. He is being accused of everything between cheating on his wife, which is kind of a known thing, I think, allegedly. He's divorced now. But these women that he was having relations with have accused him of harassment, rape, cannibalism, and that's where these text messages that he's supposedly having with someone, he says that it's not him. He is having this conversation saying that he wants to drink this woman's blood, that he wants to hold her beating heart and shit. It's really freaking weird. And what's even weirder is, despite him saying it's all fake, it's not him, he dropped out of this movie that he was going to be filming with J-Lo called Shotgun Wedding. Now, I'm going to get to J-Lo in a second because I love this Hollywood world where everyone's interconnected and it's a whole deceitful web of amazing gossip. Now, first of all, because I don't know if he is a Batman or a comic book guy, or maybe he was in Wonder Woman, maybe Star Wars, whatever. I really don't give a shit. You guys don't even need to fill me in because trust me, I won't be watching the movies or show that he's in. I'm interested in his name, Armie Hammer. So I thought to myself, is this a stage name? You know, like Annie Hathaway. Who would have ever thought when I wrote down Anne Hathaway that people call me Anne for the rest of my life? Oh, I don't know, because it's your fucking name. Anyway, Armie Hammer is his actual name. It's actually Armand Douglas Hammer. And his grandfather is Armand Hammer. Arm and Hammer. And I was like, holy shit, is this where they got the name Arm and Hammer? Is he the legacy, the grandson of the Arm and Hammer baking soda guy? But no, little fun fact, Arm and Hammer company's brand name did not originate with Arm and Hammer. It was created 31 years before Arm and Hammer was born. Yes, I'm reading straight from Wikipedia. His grandfather was inspired to buy stock in Arm and Hammer because the company had the exact same name as him. But how freaking weird is that? Anyhow, my question to you is, can he bounce back from this? Let's say it's not true. How is he going to prove that in a court of law, for example? Is he going to have to call in former lovers and they're going to have to say, no, he didn't hook me up to a blood thinning dialysis machine and drink my blood. No, he didn't cut me open and hold my beating heart and put it back in. I'm just saying, I think he's going to have a very hard time bouncing back from this, especially because he dropped out of a movie with frickin' J-Lo. Who does that? Now let's talk about J-Lo. I don't necessarily think she is the most talented singer. I wasn't blown away by her New Year's Eve performance. Did I bawl my eyes out during Selena? Of course I did. And it's still one of my favorites. I've told you, Selena holds a deep place in my heart. However, she went on Instagram and actually responded to someone that called her out for having Botox and plastic surgery. You can go, I think, in her Instagram. It's not the first video. By the time you listen to this, it's probably 2 or 3 rows down. Go and watch this video. Her face looks very shiny, and she's bragging about the latest face mask that her J-Lo beauty line is putting out. And I think the best thing for me to do is just play a little bit of this for you, and then I'm going to read you the comment, and then we're going to discuss this.
Okay, I just took off the mask. Honestly, I cannot even see a line on my face.
So it's funny.
Is glowy and gorgeous and tight. and yummy and like, oh my God, this is the best mask that I've ever, ever tried. It's better than the SK2s. It's better than all those ones I have over there. This is going to be the top selling mask in the world. It is fantastic. And that ear situation that pulls it up makes all the difference. And there's nothing dripping down my face. It's not messy. It's just beautiful. Leave it on for 20 minutes and 10 years. I feel like it took 10 years off my face.
Okay, I'm going to stop right there. It goes on for, another 35 seconds or so. I want to point out a couple things. When she talks about it pulls up by your ears, notice how she's wearing her hair. On both sides, she has these little tiny, almost like Hasidic Jew curls. And I'm not trying to use it as like a slur or anything. Like really, truly, it looks bizarre because her hair's all tight, pulled back into this ponytail. And then these weird, wispy curls in front of her ears that she's playing with, pulling them in front of her ears. Why might someone do that? Oh, I don't know, maybe to cover some facelift scars, potentially. But remember, she said she's never had any plastic surgery. Well, let's also talk about the obvious Botox and filler that she has. Her upper lip does not move the entire time that she's talking in this particular clip where she's talking about the 10 years coming off her face just from this face mask. And I guess I'm getting really worked up about this because she's putting out an unrealistic cure for aging for people who are looking for it and looking to her. If you are getting Botox or filler, just freaking say it. Look at her in the Selena days. Look at her now. Her entire brow shape is different. Her forehead does not move. Her upper lip doesn't move. And even looking in her grid on Instagram, if you go way, way back, you can see photos where she's smiling and you can clearly see little smile lines, which is perfectly normal. Your face has to move for you to smile and make expressions. Now, this comment in her Instagram post, I'm pulling it up here because it obviously blew up. It's all over the place. But can I just mention that brows and forehead doesn't move at all when you talk or try to express? You definitely have Botox and tons of it, and it's all good, just saying. I think that's fairly kind. I wouldn't ever reply to anyone that, but again, she's shilling a beauty product saying that's going to take away 10 years off your face and there's not a single wrinkle or whatever. And JLo responds, LOL, that's just my face. For the 500 millionth time, I have never done Botox or any injectables or surgery. Just saying, get you some JLo Beauty and feel beautiful in your own skin. And here is another JLo Beauty secret. Try spending your time being more positive, kind and uplifting of others. Don't spend your time trying to bring others down. That will keep you youthful and beautiful too. Sending you love. And then she puts hashtags, beauty from the inside out. Beauty has no expiration date. I just hate all of this. There's so many people that are going to feel like shit about themselves that they are not living up to this beauty standard that JLo is putting out. I'll wrap this up in a second, but I'm just going to say, if you are naturally beautiful and you get procedures done, share what you're getting done and say, and I supplement with my own beauty products. Do not go out there saying your skin and your face look exactly the way they do because of olive oil and sunblock. That's what she claims she's been using her entire life. Olive oil and sunblock. Just be honest about shit. All right. Speaking of being honest about stuff, I want to take a moment to talk about Discovery Plus because unbeknownst to me, Dave went ahead and he ordered a trial run of that Discovery Plus. So we have it for the month. It's whatever, $6-7. And I have to tell you, I'm really not that impressed. The current season that's airing on TLC isn't even on there yet. Not even past episodes. Pillow Talk for the current season is not on there. There's 90 Day Journey so far, which is just recycled content from all the other previous seasons. So you can look up Daniello Mohammed's journey so far, Mike and Natalie's. To me, why would I rewatch all that shit when I've already dedicated hundreds, if not thousands of hours to these people? They do have the Bears All episodes, but not that many of them, and they're not that interesting. Unless you want to watch Hazel and Tariq and see Tariq's latest rap. I'm just very disappointed in it. I don't think I'm going to be renewing after this month. It does say something about 90 Day Fiancé channel coming January 29th. Well, then don't hype it up for the entire month of December saying, oh, it's going to drop January 1st or January 4th. And there's fucking bullshit over there. So don't waste your money as of now, in my opinion. I think the content that we're getting for free, relatively free on TLC, is the most interesting and the freshest, most up-to-date content. All right, speaking of additional content, very quickly over on Patreon this week on We Love to Hate TV, Amanda and I are wrapping up the season of Marriage Bootcamp, and we're going to bring you the latest episode of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. And over on Total Request Podcast, we have two brand new shows that we have not talked about, not recapped yet. The first is a listener request to watch an episode of My Big Fat Gypsy American Wedding. Whew, that's a long title. I think it has two cousins getting married to each other in it. I may be wrong, or maybe every episode our cousin's getting married. And we also have Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew. I requested Amanda to watch an episode from the season with Carrie Ann Panache, something like that. It's wild. It's the season with Mackenzie Phillips, and everyone hates Carrie Ann. They think she's a spoiled little bitch. Amazing, iconic episode. So check that out. That's at patreon.com/trpod. Now, let's jump into Life After Lockup. Only my favorite or least favorite couples here. I'm definitely not a crazy fitness fanatic or vegan health nut, but I do consider myself pretty savvy when it comes to vitamins. That's why I'm a dedicated Ritual subscriber. I have tried so many vitamins over the last 15 years, reading labels, standing in the grocery store for way too long, always trying to get the most bang for my buck. About a year ago, I received a sample bottle of Ritual, and instantly I became a customer. Ritual uses algae oil instead of fish oil, which is the huge seller for me. I can't stomach omega-3s delivered via fish oil because it just sits in my stomach. It's gross, and forget trying to get your kids to take it. So between Dave and I and my kids, we take four of Ritual's varieties. Dave and I take the multi men and women's 18 plus. My son takes the children's 4 and up. And for my daughter getting into those tween years, she takes the teen girls multi. There's also pre and postnatal and men's and women's for 50 and up. So there is something for everyone. Now, as most of you know, my kids also have food and environmental allergies, so it's really important to me that Ritual deliver on their high-quality, traceable, allergen-free, gluten-free formula. It's safe, and they get the thumbs up from my kids' pediatrician. Now, every doctor is different, but yeah, I am unapologetic about being the mom who brings the vitamins to their checkups because I want to make sure that I am on the right track. And listen, if you're not a huge fan of comparing minerals and figuring out which pills everyone is taking in your house, trust me, I get it. Ritual could not make it any easier. You just click on the vitamins you want for you and or your household, and just like that, your bundle will arrive and you're saving on shipping and the hassle of standing in a grocery store comparing very vague labels, by the way. Daily changes can lead to big results, so start small today. Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Try it out, satisfaction guaranteed. Go to ritual.com/realityTV to start your Ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/realityTV. I hit the snooze on Michael and Sarah, as you know, about, five episodes ago, because who gives a shit? Same thing with Quaylon and Chevelle, although I don't even think they were on this episode. Now, Brittany is having a hard time with her mom here, all this addiction stuff. One funny moment in all of this really sad, sad stuff is that Brittany and Marcelino are doing a stakeout, which, you know, I really would love to do. If any of you are in law enforcement, please invite me for a ride along because I would love to do some stakeout stuff with zero responsibility or expectation of me actually doing anything with the bad guys because I'm a huge freaking wimp. But they are in their minivan and they're in this crazy kind of dangerous area of Las Vegas. And they're just watching this dingy little motel to see if her mom's coming back. And all of a sudden, it's like an episode of Cops. All these cop cars come swarming in there. You're seeing the lights reflect everywhere. Someone gets thrown to the ground. Marcelino says that there is crackhead kung fu shit. And of course, I'm laughing my ass off. And I don't want anyone hurt in the process of this. It ends up being okay. But I was living. That's the sort of adrenaline rush that I love to see from afar. Now, Lacey, Shane, and Lacey's dad and John, it's so freaking stupid. I think they're all in on it, all four of them. Shane and John obviously have this crazy love triangle with Lacey. I think that's somewhat true, but I also think they all want a freaking paycheck. And Shane's just dumb enough to throw himself in there, dressed like a freaking toddler, by the way. He goes golfing with Lacey's dad, who seems like he is not just drunk, like there's some sort of other substance abuse thing going on, because he looks like drunk uncle on, I don't know, pills, meth, coke. I don't know my drugs, but he was on something. And Shane's there trying to make jokes about swinging a golf club. Like, I'm going to swing this and hit someone. Freaking dumbass. But he looks ridiculous. He's got on bright green neon undies, these big toddler pants, looking like Kevin Federline when he went golfing. That's probably his fashion icon. They're just a mess. They're stupid. Lindsay and Scott, I think it's a damn miracle either of them are alive, because Lindsay seems like the type of person who would have set that house on fire weeks ago. She is absolutely psychotic. I don't even know how her own mother would trust Lindsay alone with her daughter, with Miley. She's that unhinged. She's carving shit into Scott's desk. She's dumping Gold Bond all over the place. And Scott's just sitting there with his weird upper lip, smoking a cigarette at one of the many air conditioning units that are barely hanging on in a window. He's gaslighting her. She's gaslighting him. And yes, I know gaslighting is the hashtag of the last year and a half, but it's absolutely true. Do any of us feel sorry for either of them? Of course not, because this is exactly what Scott signed up for when he chose to date and support an inmate. What else did he think he was going to get? And Lindsay, I mean, who the hell cares? She's a selfish user, and I think we all know she's back in prison anyway. As for Sean and Destiny, we still have no resolution between these two. We are no closer to finding out about this $50,000 or if he pays back his ex. No information whatsoever other than getting to watch Destiny and her mom sharing a cocktail together out on the patio. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me correct myself. Sharing a Costco-sized bottle of Jaeger. Wow. Well, then they go into some real dark stuff about Destiny being sexually abused for a number of years as a young girl. And it really makes sense, her behavior now. Not that it excuses what she's doing, but it definitely puts a full picture together for us that Destiny has a lot more work to do than just serving time. She really needs some serious therapy. And it makes me wonder about who's taking care of Destiny's children, because the show does not show us. I think she's got at least 3 or 4 kids of her own that we never see. So where are they? Who's taking care of them? That is a really sad situation altogether. Now let's talk about Andrea and Lamar. You know my favorite couple, because I love Lamar. I find it extremely troubling, irresponsible, I guess would be the right word, to see that Andrea and Lamar's home is very cluttered. It seems kind of messy, probably because she's spending all day concentrating on herself and perseverating on her relationship with Lamar instead of taking care of shit and making sure that her kids are in a somewhat organized or clean household. It worries me and it makes me pissed off because her house is a disaster. But as soon as she gets in her car, we notice she has a very nice car. I'm still driving around a 13-year-old car and I have no problem with it because priorities. If your house is a disaster and your kids are crammed into the small space, but you have enough money to buy or lease a car that's that nice for yourself, I don't like any of that situation. And it makes me despise Andrea even more. Now, Tennyson comes out as the voice of reason that needs to be graduated from the show. Like, he should have his own show, his own salary, so that he can then adopt his sisters and get them out of this situation. We find Andrea yelling at her kids to pack their bags. They're not going to stick around in that house. They're going to stay at a hotel until Lamar can learn he can't make their daughter lie to their mother. Follow me here because I promise I'm getting somewhere. Tennyson, hearing this once he's in this luxury car, well, I mean, I'd rather sleep in the car than I would in that house. But he's like, yeah, I'm not going to go stay at a hotel. This is ridiculous. You're acting very immature. And he's concerned because his youngest sister, Priscilla, seems, in his words, quote, unnaturally calm about this. And Nyla and me don't want her growing up adapting to unnatural situations. So Nyla tells her mom, when you guys argue, Tennyson and I have to treat you like children. Now, for most well-adjusted adults, that would be a life-changing moment, a mic drop moment where you're like, holy shit, what have I done to my kids? I need to figure this out. Or if I can't figure it out, I'm going to make sure that they do not witness any of that stuff. But Andrea's not going to do that because it's Andrea. We all need to group together and do a GoFundMe for Tennyson, if he's not already 18, when he turns 18, so that he can adopt Priscilla, adopt Nyla, and get a place of their own. I'm actually kind of serious about that. I would absolutely donate money towards Tennyson if I knew it would help him get away from that situation. Speaking of getting out of situations, my favorite part of this episode was actually not part of the episode. It's at the very end where they tack on that extra 10 or 15 minutes and it's life after lockup, what happened to people after they left the show. And this week, they talked to Shonda. She was the one who met up with, oh gosh, I'm forgetting his name. It's something with a T. He's the guy from Chicago that wore that weird blue suit when he met her after prison, and then she ditched him and never came back. Well, they catch up with her, and I have to tell you, I actually like the girl. I was laughing. She seems very likable, down to earth. I wouldn't want to wire her money, but she would be real fun to go out to Panera with. Maybe a little two for two. Actually, I can't eat at Panera because everything that I eat there just flies right through me. All right, a little bit too much information. I am going to take a real quick break, gear up for 90 Day Fiancé. Pop quiz time. Could you name Margot Robbie's character in Suicide Squad in under 15 seconds? What about the name of the lead singer in the Rolling Stones? If you're screaming your answers at me, then it's time for you to join me on Trivia Star, my new addiction. Why has no one told me about this free mobile app? I've been trying and failing to crush candies all this time when I could have been flexing my amazing trivia skills on Trivia Star all this time. Wasn't I just saying a few months ago that I want to join a trivia league when the world opens back up? Well, until then, you can find me. I am training on Trivia Star. There are over 60 different categories that you get to choose from: music, TV, animals, celebrities. I'm pretty skilled at the Disney and food categories. And if you choose the right answer from multiple choices before your time is up, you move on to the next level. It sounds pretty easy, but the questions get harder as you go. But if you get stuck on, you know, the football or basketball questions, you can cash in coins and gems to get hints. And right now, Trivia Star is offering 2,500 coins and 500 gems right when you download. Check out the thousands of five-star reviews Trivia Star has in the Apple Store. It's the number one trivia game in the App Store. All you have to do is go to Apple or the Google Store and search Trivia Star. Download Trivia Star for free today and get ready to flex your brain muscles. All right, let's talk about our most boring couple first and get them out of the way. That's Hazel and Tariq. I really like Hazel, I think, and I like Tariq enough that I want them off the show because I want the best for them, mostly because that little Ori is the cutest little thing ever. But let's talk about what happened during this episode regarding Minty. Remember, Minty was their girlfriend, their mutual girlfriend, and they broke up, but Tariq texted her to make sure she was okay during the pandemic. I'm sure they talked about something more at length during their discussion that we saw, but I'll be honest, I kind of zoned out and I was solely concentrating on Hazel's necklace. I couldn't figure out what the hell it said. It looked like it said Two-Face, like T-W-O Two-Face, but then I was like, oh, I bet you that's Tar for Tariq, and then the second part must be Zell, like for Tarzell, that stupid couple's name that Tariq gave them. but it looks like Tarlexi. Please take a look at this necklace and tell me what you think, because I know a cursive Z looks kind of funky, but the bottom part of the cursive Z isn't there. I told you, I zoned out and this is what I concentrated on. And by the way, Tarzell is the worst kind of couple name. It's not a Brangelina. It's not a Benifer. Tarzell sounds like a variety of primate, but a really ugly one. And it gets the reject habitat in the primate house. You know, that corner of it that smells like skunk shit. And no one goes over there because they're kind of ugly and they're not cute. And everyone would rather look at the adorable little chimpanzees on the left. That would be the one place where I would actually enjoy wearing a mask because it smells so bad in that fucking primate house. Not as bad as the penguin house, but right up there. All right, stay on target, Jody. Let's move on to Brandon and Julia. Ron and Betty are going away for the night. And let me be clear, be very specific. When I say night, I mean they left after supper because, you know, they're the type of couple that still call it supper. After they had supper and washed the supper casserole dishes, they take off and they are back before sunrise. Like, they went to the hotel to only sleep for a solid 5 hours and they're back in time to feed the livestock in the morning. And of course, we know they got to change Brandon's diaper while they're at it. So did the almost 30-year-old mice do what every new young couple would do while their still nursing mother cat is away? Of course. They have lots of perfectly toned and stretch mark-free sex all over the damn place. Did Betty have a coronary event and immediately filter Brandon's sperm out of that hot tub after she saw that scene on Sunday night? Of course she did. And you know that she saved everything she found coming out of that hot tub for his baby book, along with his baby teeth, nail clippings, the fossilized belly button that fell off, because she's got time on her hands and she's a nosy goddamn bitch. I fucking hate Betty so much. Oh, all right. I know I need to stay on target here, but I'm telling you, there's so many things that I want to say. But I'm going to hold off because I have a lifetime of potential misery ahead of me. Okay, so Betty, first of all, she's a contradiction. Okay, she's like Erica Jane. She's a riddle wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a Lands' End polo shirt. Correct me if I'm wrong. Betty was pissed that Brandon and Julia wore clothes in the hot tub, that they brought towels to the hot tub. Remember, because she said, it's for therapy. It's not for entertainment. Don't you know about pH? The pH is going to be thrown off. I mean, it's really not easy to empty that water and refill it. Gets real old, real fast. And don't laugh about it. It wasn't not funny, Brandon. God, she's truly one of the worst humans we've ever seen on this show. Don't let that supercuts, towny haircut fool you, because she is a grade A bitch from mother-in-law hell. No, I guess I should mention, I equally hate Brandon. He's a horrible fiance for making Julia put up with his mother simply because he doesn't want his mommy mad at him. He seems to think it's easier for Julia to put up with his parents' shit than it is for his parents to put up with the nothing that Julia is doing to put them out in any way. I mean, the fact that Ron and Betty just assume Julia wants to be their daughter and owes them something is so wrong. Their beloved Brandon is the one who got Julia to this point. She didn't know what she was coming into. Yeah, she met him when they were traveling, but that's completely different than this situation. You know, do they really think Julia was just going to show up and be like, oh my gosh, you know what? I happen to be an experienced farmhand. And gosh darn it, I would love to be a 4-H award winner. I mean, what the hell? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they knew who Julia was coming into this. They knew more about their living situation than Julia certainly did. And what the hell were Ron and Betty doing before Julia came? Did they have someone that they paid? Were they paying that other family friend, the one who was carrying around the hairless cat a couple weeks ago? Were they paying her ahead of time and then laid her off because now their foster daughter, their adoptive daughter, is going to come in and till the land for them? And the craziest thing about this is that I bet these two are really shocked that people think they're the selfish jerks because they are very confident, kind of over the top sure of themselves on camera, that I think they were certain viewers like us would think Julia's the villain, that she's the lazy ass not helping around the place. Look at all the perks she's getting for nothing. False. Brandon and family Brandon just don't deserve Julia. And she herself said it perfectly. I came here to marry your son, not to take care of your stuff. And who the hell are Ron and Betty to say what Julia and Brandon can and cannot do for each other? They themselves want Brandon to be doing things for them, but he's not allowed to do it for Julia. He can't bring her tea anymore because they want his time. They need more Brandon time, and they need her to help too. They don't necessarily need time to spend with her, quality time like they want with Brandon. They just need her physical labor. I mean, obviously, I'm beating a dead horse here because it's as clear as hot tub water that Brandon's parents are incredibly selfish and stubborn people. Okay, now, Julia has the audacity to wake up 3 minutes later than the early as hell that Brandon's parents expected her to get up, and they downright scold her and berate her and are so mean. That look on Betty's face, I wanted to smack the look off her face, like my mom would say. Brandon's dad says something like, oh, should we get you some tea or some tea to go real quick? And freaking bitchy Betty is like, no, we don't have time for that now. It was the same tone she gave when they had to get up and at 'em and get on the road when they were in D.C. for a day full of sightseeing. But then after she says, no, Julia can't have any tea, what does this bitch do? She carries around her fucking mug all goddamn morning. She even had the gall to have Julia hold her mug while she opened up the barn door before she watched Julia feed the freaking animals and shovel up the shit. It's like she gets sick pleasure out of making Julia feel like crap. And she loves driving that wedge between her and Brandon. She gets Brandon to think that Julia's the one who's expecting too much, that she's the crazy one, that she's the lazy one. And then she's just a total bitch to Julia. Okay, this is really triggering some stuff that hits home for me. But, you know, Betty, just like other monster-in-laws from hell, they can't hide their true intentions. They can't hide that shit-eating grin. Gah! I hope Betty is feeling all the karma coming right back her way, because hopefully she sees that all of us see how terrible she really is. All right, let's meet up with Mike and Natalie. First with Natalie, who's snooping around through Mike's house. She's trying to find the ring she returned to Mike when she said, I'm not sure I love you, but now she's sure. And in her mind, having that ring on her finger means everything's going to be a fairy tale. Now, I don't know what she intended to do had she actually found the ring. Was she going to put it on and wait for Mike to come home and then him shit his pants? Or was she just going to leave it there and let it gnaw away at her, eat away at her mind, just knowing where it is, but that she's not getting it yet? I think I said this a few weeks ago, and if I didn't, I apologize. I've been meaning to say it, but I think I did. I think Natalie just wants to lock Mike down because she's already dedicated the last 2 years of her life, you know, her crucial, fertile years. She's already spent time on it, so why not just get married? She's already been married and divorced, and now broke engagement. Now she might be engaged again. That's a lot to go through in your 30s. And in her mind, she's probably thinking, if I start this all over again with another guy, that puts baby on the back burner for probably a minimum 2 to 3 years. So in my eyes, it's just the time lost that's keeping her there with him. Now, let's jump to rice and shrimp night. Natalie already knows Mike had a long week and a bad day. So what does she do? She starts telling him that he shouldn't eat what he wants to eat because he's big, fatty, fat. She didn't say those words, but she might as well, because she starts telling him that he needs to lose weight, that he really doesn't have a right to choose what he wants to eat or cook meals for himself, because unless he lose 10 kilos, he shouldn't talk about anything to her. That's so mean. And if we were to look at this the other way around, if a man were to say that to any of the women on this show, there would be a damn probably boycott of that person. They would be canceled in 90 Day Fiancé terms. But since it's Natalie and it's a woman saying it to a guy, I think she's going to get a lot less heat for it than she should. It's just downright mean. It's cruel. And typically, I'm not one for nasty rebuttals, especially from men, about weight, whether it's gaining or losing. But I think in this case, Natalie deserved everything Mike said to her and more. Because if she could literally dish it out, she should be ready to take it. And when she called Mike an alcoholic, or no, sorry, she didn't say alcoholic, she said drunk. When she called Mike a drunk and that she was afraid of him because he grabbed a beer, I was livid. There's a big difference between someone having a beer and then being afraid of someone who is legitimately drunk and who's actually manhandling you. He came around to give her a little hug to try to get back on track and call a truce, bridge that gap between them. But she was provoking him, just like the producer said to her. They asked her, broke the fourth wall, do you provoke Mike? And she admitted to it. You know, Mike is an adult who's very capable of handling himself in different situations. He didn't lose a shit on her like I would have. He managed to earn money to travel to the Ukraine and travel back and get her over here. So for Natalie to instigate these fights with him and provoke him just because it makes her feel good is bullshit, and she does need to be called on it. And then when she went into this whole IQ thing, and do you ever go to museums? Have you ever been to a museum? What is this? Middle school summer camp? Sick burn. Ooh, you're not cultured enough. You haven't gone to enough museums. It's ridiculous. And for Miss 110 IQ to not be smart enough to realize that a 110 IQ is still average, it's within one standard deviation of a 100 average, she's such a dumbass. She's got to pull that vegetarian head out of her ass because she looks like a damn fool. God, I despise her so much right now. All right, well, that's not even the end of it, right? Because then they sit down and they start talking about this high class, low class. Natalie pulls Kelly Ben Simone with a, I'm up here, you're down here. Right. I'm with Mike here. What makes her so much better than everyone else? What makes her high class and everyone else low class? Did we see that awesome job and condo of her own? No. So until you have at least something like that, good luck with that $0 salary plus benefits, babe. She sucks. She actually would make a perfect daughter-in-law for Betty over there. Now let's jump over to Rebecca and Ziad, another mother-in-law, but, you know, this time she's marrying someone her son's age. Now, I don't totally get what's going on with these two, and Ziad is really starting to freak me out. It's just the way he's moving slowly. Like, I don't think he's quite smart enough to plot anything against Rebecca. I don't think he's going to hurt her or murder her like I may have theorized before. Because he's kind of like one of those sloths in, what movie is that, Zootopia? He's just slow moving. His reactions are slow. He never makes eye contact with anyone, even Rebecca, his fiance. He only responds to her questions if they're yes or no. If it's anything in between, he just looks right past her over her shoulder and goes, and then she rephrases it as a yes, no. Like, the apartment, do you like? Yes, I like so much. Yes, are you tired? Yes, shower rest, and yes. Now notice, he didn't wear those fake glasses that he was wearing last week, right? I guess he can see so much. Yes. Now, they end up going to sleep at night, and I don't know why I just said that. No, they went to sleep during the day. Jesus. Well, Rebecca wishes, but, you know, that cock-block daughter of hers, Jesus, what a bitch. Leave us alone. Let us have the room slash loft. I don't know. I don't get the whole layout of that place. But anyway, Rebecca wakes up, turns over, and does that little wink and shoulder shrug like she always does with Ziad. It's a secret message. We both get it. Wink, wink. But Ziad doesn't get it. He's not on the same page as Rebecca. And it's not necessarily Rebecca's fault, and it's not necessarily Zied's fault. They're just not compatible. Zied is not in his own world, so he's not feeling like himself. He can't be the big manly man. He can't be acting all king of the castle like he did when she visited Tunisia, because here, she's kind of top dog. You know, she's not the little damsel in distress in Tunisia. How do I do this hookah? You know, it's role reversal and probably somewhat of a cultural thing, somewhat of a family and personality thing. Zied's not going to be comfortable with that. So even laying in bed in the morning in the home that she is providing, I don't think he's comfortable with that. And I don't even know if he knows why. He's homesick, sure. He's also blaming it on Rebecca's daughter, as is Rebecca. Like, if they weren't there with Rebecca to pick him up, everything would have been fine. He would have felt better, and Rebecca would have felt more comfortable, which is such bullshit. Way to throw it on your daughter. And if I were her daughter, I would have been pissed watching that episode, hearing my mom saying, it's my fault they had a weird first day together. Leaning against a brick wall and sitting on concrete, he looked way more comfortable than he did laying in bed with Rebecca. That says a lot. He wants to get the hell out of there. And I feel bad for him because he didn't realize that he was stuck there for a year, but maybe that's something he could have pulled up on Tunisian Google. And bottom line, he's just not that into Rebecca. I think he thought he was, and it's not anything against Rebecca. I think she could find an equally hardworking American guy right there in Ohio. Zied's just not the guy for her. They had their little fling. I think it's run its course. Not every relationship is meant for marriage. And I think he had a nice little visit here to the States, and it's time for him to go home. Okay, let's move on to Yara and Jovi. It has been a whopping 10 days since Jovi left, and Jovi's mom is planning this little coffee date, which I thought was very sweet. Yara does need to get out of the house. I would be claustrophobic in that place. Even though it's very nice, it is small, and I don't think New Orleans is necessarily a place where you can just go and take a nice walk for fresh air. Correct me if I'm wrong. At least the area that they're living in. I think it's a little more low energy urban than what Yara is used to. And actually, let's talk about Yara's personality, because I think this is why that coffee date was so awkward. Yara is, how you say, not so great at first impressions. I think part of it's cultural and the pragmatics of language and translations, but it's also how Yara looks. You know, she just kind of looks like a stuck-up brat. Not that it's her fault, but she just does. She's a lot to look at, and then paired with that bluntness, I don't think she's someone who would be an instant best friend. But she has grown on me. I don't think I could be friends with her tomorrow if she showed up, but she's not always wrong. And she does have a heart under all the horrible extensions and the fake lashes and all the extra. I think she is a fairly good person. So back to this coffee house. Did it go well? Do I think Yara and Mother Jovi are going to try to get along? Yes. Do I blame Jovi for not helping bridge that relationship a long time ago? Sure. And no, I'm not going to keep asking myself questions because I just realized I'm doing it. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, Jovi really is the one putting bare minimum into this relationship and into other people. So unless it makes Jovi's life harder in some way, he's not going to really be doing anything while he's out traveling. For Jovi, he's like out of sight, out of mind. I concentrate on myself. So those two ladies are on their own because Jovi don't give a shit. Now, just as this episode is wrapping up, we got one more scene with Yara, and she drops the bombshell of the season that she might be pregnant. I was feeling sick watching it, being like, oh God, please no. Don't let her be pregnant. I've never wished for an obscure lead poisoning or an asbestos poisoning on anyone in my life before, except this point, because my God, there's going to be an offspring of Jovi, and I will put my life on it. Jovi's child, no matter when, where, or with whom, they're going to be born with a full set of permanent teeth. They will be that 0.1% of babies that are born with a full fucking grill. Mark my words. Now let's talk about our last couple. And thank God, because this really put all of us through it. Andrew and Amira. Let's begin with Andrew and that loneliness burger. That was one of the most depressing things I've seen on the show until we meet up with Amira. Now, it has been a few days and Andrew hasn't received any info on Amira. Fun fact time. Last week, TLC tweeted that Andrew was given the option of flying to Mexico City with the crew to meet up with Amira. And guess what? He said no. But then this week he's telling us, I did everything I could. There's nothing more I could do. I exhausted all of my options to find out where she was and help her. That's flat out bullshit. Even production is calling him on it. And did you notice how not sorry he was when Amira finally texted him? She's saying she's in, the Netherlands, or she flew into Amsterdam. And he was like, oh, sorry, baby. Must have been really traumatizing. I mean, you can reach out to me and let me know if you want to talk about it sometime. You freaking kidding me? Even someone who is in an in-like relationship, not even in love, would be freaking the hell out. And you could tell in her text tone that she was pissed. So yeah, Andrew sucks, you guys. And you know he smells bad at this point. He's still wearing that freaking disgusting, faded, sweated through shirt. It's like scratch and sniff at this point. And his hair, the last time we saw it, it was shiny, greasy, but now it's crossed over into that dry, ashy looking stage. Ugh. Okay, now let's jump over to Amira. She's much more pleasant on the eyes. I mean, gorgeous as can be after spending 3 days, 3 full days in a detention center, adding on that flight there and a flight back to Amsterdam, where now she's got a quarantine for probably 2 weeks in that hotel, right? And finally, we get her side of the story. And no surprise, Andrew is an asshole. That freaking greasy, ashy-haired wannabe pirate tells Amira that she wasn't doing enough to prove her love and that he was always doing things for her. So if she didn't go to Mexico and reciprocate back to him in that way, then that means she is selfish and she doesn't want to be with him. And surprise, surprise, guess who has not even tried to contact her to see if she got there okay? Andrew. Because why? Andrew is a selfish frickin' jerk. His little, I'm a daycare provider bullshit. That's such an act. I still think he is a lazy piece of shit. I think he's just easily employed by his mom and his setting up home base like he's John Walsh. You know, he has a Find Amira search party set up in his room. That was all a frickin' act. And I really, really like that they threw that out there on Twitter. I would have liked if they broke the fourth wall like they did with, what's her name, Natalie, and told us or asked him, and to hear him say no. Because really, Amira deserves that at this point. I'm hoping next week they include them in the episode, but it seems like every week they are cutting out a couple or two. Like this week, we didn't see Stephanie and Ryan. God damn it. You weren't answering your text, Ryan. So we'll see what happens. Welcome to Married at First Sight Atlanta. New season, new couples. It's always kind of a beast to jump into because we have all the lead-up specials, and then this first episode was 3 hours long. That was a lot, you guys, but I'm very excited about it. Because it was such a long episode, I'm just going to hit the highlights here. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be a 3-hour recap and I have children to raise. So let's jump right in. I think what I'm going to do is first impressions, and then we'll talk about all the different couples getting together in our first couple to get married. So the first couple we meet is Brianna and Vincent. First impression of Brianna is that it's completely unfair how gorgeous she is. Like, she hands down is one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. And you know, I loved her type A cleaning habits. That's my girl. Now, Vincent, I'm kind of torn on him because the luxury car dealer thing makes me lean towards kind of a smarminess, you know, or that guy in the club who would have the dress shirt unbuttoned, one too many and the collar kind of flares out too much and very in the club. However, he was wearing a plain, worn-in gray t-shirt when he was with his friends, so that changed my mind a little bit. So I think I'm going to give him the chance. First impressions of Virginia and Eric. I love that he's in the Air Force Reserves. You know, so much respect and appreciation for that. I do think he looks older than 35, but some of that might be a lot of sun damage flying around in the planes and stuff like that. But he looks like a sun-damaged older Henry from last season. I get that vibe from him. At first, I worried about this jokester prankster personality he said he had, that he loves doing this stuff because that could get real weird real quick. But he grew on me. He seemed like a really great guy when they were at that bachelor party. I don't think it's an act. So far, I like him. Although I would love to hear the whole backstory from his ex-wife, kind of get that story. But I doubt that's a gift that we will ever receive from Lifetime. Now, Virginia, again, first impression when I first saw her. She's young. She's 26. And she says she's a lot to handle and has abandonment issues because she was a child of divorce. So red flags all over the place for me because she seems like a pretty eligible bachelorette. So why is she going on the show at only 26? And honestly, she's only a few years older than my niece. So I was thinking about my niece in my mind and I would throw my body down on Pastor Cal to stop my niece from marrying a 35-year-old divorced stranger with that prematurely aged skin. Although Eric seems like a great guy, I don't understand this match yet. Like, are they trying to make Eric answer her daddy issues? I don't like the match. Okay, first impressions of Paige and Chris. Well, the very first thing is, that's my daughter's name and that's my brother's name, so I know I won't get these two mixed up this season. But first impressions, and it's important that I point out that I wrote these down in order as I watched, because clearly my mind changes as we go on. Paige first. Okay, she's super cute. Love her smile. She appeared to be very religious, and I was hoping at that point that this was not going to be an ongoing conversation throughout the season because, you know, I can't do 2 to 3 hours of religion every week, but I think it is going to be a reoccurring thing. Now, then we meet Chris. Okay. He says he's a finance manager, restaurant owner, and already the first sentence in, I was like, is he really, though? That's two pretty big things to be having going on at the same time. How is that possible? So already a little red flag. Then he said, I'm a former minister, but I didn't make money, so I left. And I was like, oh, God, he's kind of getting smarmy. I feel bad for him that he was homeless, but he kept bringing up in that first segment of his how much money he makes, that he makes 6 figures now. He doesn't want to be matched with someone that's just for his money, which how is that possible if she doesn't even know anything about you? But whatever. He's also twice engaged. A little red flag. And then, I mean, of all the flags, all the country flags with red in them, I was waving all over the place because he said he wants a wife who's submissive, good in bed, a real freak. Okay. Those are the first three things that come to mind when you think of someone that you want to be your wife. Not generous, loving, trustworthy. No. Submissive, really good in bed, a real freak. Jesus. So after that, I started getting real salty and real bitchy. And I'm just going to say exactly how I feel because I can, and this is my podcast, and I really don't give a shit if Chris is listening. Chris is not that cute to be expecting that much. He is slimy. I don't trust him. His forehead to face ratio is a little off, and he can get the hell out of here with those weird wash slim fit jeans and loafers with no socks. More on that later. But first, let's meet Haley and Jacob. First impression of Haley, she and her friends have the exact same face, but different variations of noses. But that aside, I think I like her because she seems pretty normal. I can tell from her furnishings that she shops at Target and Wayfair pretty often. And I just like her vibe. It seems pretty normal. The one friend was kind of annoying, but I could see how I might come off like that on camera too. Now, Jacob. Is he a Gronkowski brother, and why does his face look dramatically different depending on the angle? I wouldn't even say he's a classic Seinfeld two-face. He's like an eight-face. And he's got a weird personality, or many personalities. We got to see this former bronze bodybuilder one. He's got Mr. Cowboy wearing cowboy boots while raking up his sand. What the hell was that? And then he's wearing this mullet wig because he's hilarious. He does karaoke. And then we see him mixing tracks in his home studio DJ booth. Jacob seems very insecure deep down, which is probably why he's got so many different personalities and interests and faces, you know? And also, do we really think he's 38? Because he looks 52 if he's a day. All right, moving on. Clara and Ryan. First impression of Clara was that she's young and cute and friendly, and she's also very aware of the camera and she knows how to play to it. Dare I say, she may be a little too comfortable on camera. Okay, Ryan, I thought, was adorable. He's got a total baby face, but then, dear God, he took his hat off. Maybe it's just me, but his Proud Boy-inspired, grown-out mohawk thing has got to go. And I question the obsession with exercise and fitness because he might be judgmental if his partner, Clara, doesn't live for, you know, throwing weight balls around in the backyard. So after we meet all of our couples separately, all of our bachelor, bachelorette separately, they have them all get together. So the brides get together, the grooms get together, and I think, let's talk about the guys first. So first of all, Chris is not making a good first impression on anyone. So I felt validated that I was getting the same impression as basically the rest of the general public. Anyone running into him at a bar is going to get the same impression. So straight away, he does what Chris is going to do and asks the guys, what are you going to do if your wife is ugly? Oh, you mean, what if they have a dent in their forehead like you, so they don't look like they fully evolved? I mean, who the hell told this asshole that he's attractive enough to be judging other people as ugly? God, I hate Chris so much. So then he goes to talk to his pastor. I'm basically focusing on Chris at this point because I hate him so much. He goes to talk to his pastor, not Pastor Cal, by the way, because he wants us to know that he's a nice spiritual guy. This was not sincere at all. He wants to go to try to convince us that he's over his ex, which he obviously isn't. And then he wants a blessing from his pastor to reassure him that not sleeping with his wife, not blessing his wife with his sex, is going to be good for their marriage. You know, that he's going to save his godly sperm because he's such a godly man. Whatever, Chris. Is that what helps you sleep at night? That's what makes you feel better? You can be a dick anywhere, anytime, but if you go to your pastor and you have him tell you that you're a good guy, then it makes it all better? Ew. No. We see you for who you are, Chris. Let's talk about the bachelor party, and then I'm going to go back and talk about the ladies. So, at the bachelor party, Chris shows up late, and Eric, remember Eric who looks like Henry, he's starting to feel like Jacob is the weirdo of the group. And, you know, maybe Jacob is a little cocky, thinks too highly of himself. And I agree with Eric. I'm starting to like Eric more and more. He's like an outgoing Henry. You know, I don't think we're going to have a whole lot of surprises with Eric. I think he's going to be just the steady, nice guy of the season, but that could cause some drama based on who he's matched with. Now, let's talk about this bachelor party that was so freaking awkward. Who the hell planned these things and who hired those dancers? Because, first of all, I felt bad for the women because they were in these gold cages that looked like they were old elevators from Trump Tower or something. I hated it. All these bright lights, they're in these little tiny outfits, having to turn around and shake their asses and strip or dance for all these guys. It was horrible. And it brings me back to this age-old question that I have had for decades, and I'm pretty sure I've brought this up, but not for a while. Why do guys even go to strip clubs with their friends? It seems like it would be something you would do on your own. Not because It's dirty or nasty, but why would you want to go with your friends? Like, do the guys just stand there and they get boners together? Like, hey, bro, hey, dude, let's go stare at that hot girl's crotch while she bends over and they just have boners together. Like the one chick in the pink outfit that they were watching from 2 feet away, just two of them standing there having a conversation about getting married while they're both staring at her ass. It seems like a weird time to be sharing bone time, boner time together. And the freaking bearded guy, oh God, what was his name? Babyface, Vincent. Vincent standing there talking to the chick. She was in green. She looked like she was transitioning into like a human lizard or something. You know, the whole world is going to see you making a fool of yourself hitting on this girl. Don't you feel like an idiot standing on the other side of a cage hitting on a dancer? Guys suck. They're just so freaking weird. Sorry to any gentlemen listening. I just don't get this staring at strippers with the boner in your pants. Or maybe you guys don't get boners when you go look. But then why? I don't get it. All right. Let's talk about the ladies here. Not too much to report. Clara seemed to come out as our narrator for the episode. She might be a little too talky for some of our likings, but I also think she's very aware of that camera. She knows what's expected of her, and she delivered. At least that's what I hope. She's just performing as her producers want her to. Otherwise, her fronting is going to get real annoying real quickly. Now let's talk about Virginia. I really wanted to like her because she seems sweet, especially after we saw her try on the dress, which I think I'll talk about next week. I think we'll go wedding by wedding, but Virginia was full-on Gretchen Rossi, naked-waisted, and she was messy during that bachelorette party. She was getting the drunk sweats. If you noticed when Clara and Paige were talking, they zoomed over to her, and you could just see that sweaty forehead going, her lids getting heavier and heavier, and sure enough, she got the barf edit. That's when the person goes to the bathroom, they shoot the door closed, and then you see in the captions, cough, cough, dot, 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 cough. And all the other girls are laughing at her. God, I felt badly for her. But, you know, that's what a self-proclaimed party girl who's only 26 is going to give us. That honeymoon should be interesting when she finds out Eric is not the big drinker that she wants in a husband. Oof. All right, let's go to Clara and Ryan's wedding. And then I'm going to talk about everyone else's dresses and tux shopping per couple next week. Hopefully that makes sense. Clara and Ryan get married first. And I was very happy they started with them because, like I said, Clara was shining as kind of the star, the narrator of this episode. So it made sense. We just jumped right in with them. So going back a little bit, Clara goes dress shopping. And it went pretty well, pretty uneventful. I mean, you know, when you have a cute little frame, everything looks good on you. And she's got a right to be picky. It's her day. And I did like the dress she picked. It was very simple. The back was cool. I liked it. It wasn't spectacular, but she's going to look good at anything. Ryan's tux was another win for me. I'm going to put it in the top two tuxes of all the guys. It suited him. It was just different enough with that little handkerchief thing. And he did not have that god-awful brocade tux that a bunch of the other guys had. Ugh. So Clara's prediction of what her groom would look like was pretty spot on. And I got goosebumps when she was saying culturally ambiguous. He's a little bit taller than I am. I was crossing my fingers. And based on the gift she gave him and what he gave her, they at least have similar humor and enjoy traveling and the outlook on life like that. So I'm pretty optimistic here. I didn't enjoy one part of his gift, and that's the blindfold. I just think it's so risky. You know, you're giving a blindfold to a woman who's been having her makeup and her hair done all morning. So is she going to want to risk messing that all up to put a blindfold on? And what if she didn't want a blindfold? She wants to be able to walk down the aisle and look and see her bridesmaids or her mom, or she just doesn't want to trip and fall like I would do, you know? So I didn't really enjoy the whole blindfold thing. It was sweet. I like the gesture. I get it. it would just make me more nervous, especially if I'm not having the best day. So I empathize with her when she was having a little bit of a panic attack. You know, she didn't like her hair. She thought her dress was too short. When you feel like shit and you think you're going to have a panic attack and you can't change anything about the situation, and then you throw a blindfold on top of that. She handled it and pulled it all together and made her way down that aisle way better than anyone else could have. Maybe it's because she's a flight attendant. Oh my God, I just made that connection. The aisle. Oh, that would have been really cute if she was like, I'm going this way, exits this way, this way. She could have made a really good joke, a really bad punny joke before she went in. Like, where's the exit, guys, with the arms going this way? I would have done that, then instantly regretted it because I would have been sounding like a total moron with a dad joke. But anyway, she gets down the aisle and it's like, okay, blindfolds off in 3, 2, 1, boom. We get the next week on Married at First Sight. Boo. I blame Pastor Kale. All right, you guys ready for this week's Would You Rather? It is Married at First Sight inspired, and away we go. Would you rather be matched for marriage with a former nonviolent offender, only a misdemeanor, or would you rather marry someone that Betty and Ron from 90 Day Fiancé chose for you? Former nonviolent offender inmate, only a misdemeanor, or Betty and Ron's number one guy or gal just for you. Maybe even go on your first double date together. All right. Thank you guys for listening this week. Check out Did I Make This Up podcast. It is friend of the podcast, one of our very own Justine's podcast. Amanda and I guested on it. We talked about the letter episode from Jersey Shore. We had a ton of fun. That's Did I Make This Up? Go ahead, download that episode and subscribe to Justine's podcast. And check out We Love to Hate TV and Total Request podcast. Those links are in the show notes. And this week, more than ever, please be careful out there. Wear a damn mask. Come back next week, same time, same place, and stay salty.